Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including 131 of the best stations in the U.S. and Canada, and XM Channel 158 on Saturday, October 16th, 2010. This is episode 709. Enjoy. Talk about computers and the internet, yes. Cell phones and camcorders, sure. Home theater, digital photography, all that great stuff. Let's do it today, shall we? Here's my phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., you could still call me using Skype Out. It's free because it's a toll-free number in the U.S., so use Skype Out. That's a good way to call us at 888-827-5536. Love to hear from you and talk to you about anything that's on your mind today. It's funny, you know, by the time we get to the weekend, we've had, you know, a week of computer stuff to talk about. And I talk about it all the time. You know, we have all these shows we do during the week as podcasts, not on the radio, but as internet shows on my Twit network. And, you know, by the time we get to Saturday, I feel like, we talked about that, didn't we? We talked about that. And I can never remember what I've talked about with you or just on these other shows. It was way back on Monday. Oh, way back that Microsoft had the press conference, early morning press conference, announcing Windows Phone 7. Now, we've known a lot about Windows Phone 7. I do a Windows show with a guy named Paul Thurrott, who wrote the book, literally, the book on Windows Phone 7, which comes out in a week or two, Windows Phone 7 Secrets. And he's had it for a long time. So there were not a huge number of surprises, but I do think, you know, we've got the details now, and it's something to be aware of. I know you are all, for the most part, very interested in cell phones, smartphones these days. In fact, it's the fastest growing segment of computing. You know, desktop computers are a very mature product right now. There's not a lot new to say about desktop computers. In fact, I think I might have bought my last desktop computer this week. I don't know. Will it be the last? Sometimes, you know, you ever have that, I guess, as you get older in your life. You wonder, is this the last car I'll buy? Is this the last house I'll buy? I think I just bought my last desktop. But not so much because I'm old, although I know I'm a little older than a few of you. But more because I think the desktop computers are kind of plateaued. That's it. What more are you going to do? The processors aren't going to get any faster. I mean, they might get slightly faster, but we're not going to see that kind of growth in processor speed. In fact, the way they're doing it now, remember Intel for a while said, oh, we'll get to 4 gigahertz and beyond. They were like Buzz Lightyear. 4 gigahertz and beyond. And in fact, they realized, wait a minute, we can't. Get to 4 gigahertz, you got a radio transmitter and a frying pan in your computer. So they said, well, we'll stop at 3 some. But what we will do is we'll put multiple processors in the same chip. So you get, you know, 2, 4, now 6 processors in one chip. And the computer manufacturer said, well, that's not enough. We're going to put 2 chips in one machine. So now this machine I just bought, it's not even top of the line anymore. Top of the line machine you'd buy would have an Intel processor that has 6 cores in one die. That's one physical chip. And then 2 of those. So there would be 12 processors in a machine. And each of those processors running around 2 to 3 gigahertz. So it's essentially, 12 supercomputers in one box. I didn't go that crazy. I got the Intel Xeon Westmere chip, which is a quad core, 4 chips in one chip, and then 2 of those. So that's 8 process. I figured 8 should be enough for anyone. And 8 gigabytes of memory, of RAM. 8 gigabytes of RAM. That's a lot of, And I figure I can't see on the horizon. Maybe you have an opinion on this. I cannot see on a horizon a computer or a need for a computer faster than this. I think we'd have to invent a new kind of user interface, maybe a 3D holographic world that you live in that would need something faster. And I don't see that on the horizon. So I'm thinking this may be, by the time I'm ready to buy something faster, who knows if it'll be a desktop computer. By then, it could be something you embed in your head, but I know I'll be buying faster cell phones. And I think that's what's happening, is that all the innovation, all the, the deep brains, the high-end guys, the people, the engineers, the guys and gals who are really smart at this, they're not really focusing on desktop processors, desktop operating systems. They're focusing on portable, on small, on little. So this Windows Phone 7, this is where Microsoft's putting all its bets on this. This is, in some ways, the future of the company. And they've really re-engineered. I have to give them a lot of credit. This is a gutsy thing to do. You know, one of the problems Microsoft has had all along is being tied to Windows and not willing, and understandably so, not willing to make major changes to Windows because, after all, you've got to support all the existing hardware and software running on Windows. So you can only gradually move the platform along, right? You only make minor changes bit by bit as we go. And at every step, Microsoft is very cautious to make sure it works with most stuff that is out there, right? We're not going to do anything so dramatic that it won't work. Well, on the cell phone, they're not as successful. And, of course, they had less to lose. And so they said, we're throwing it out. We're going to start from, we're going to take that design for Windows Mobile, crumple it up, throw it out, and we're gonna. What would you do if you could start with a clean slate? And that's what they have, Windows Phone 7, and it looks really different. It looks a lot like if you've ever used a Zune HD, this Zune HD interface, which is called the Metro interface. It's kind of like a plus sign. You know, you can go left, right, up, or down on it anywhere with your finger. Scroll left, right, or up and down, which you can't do on Android or iPhone. You've got these tiles that show you your data. There are apps, but apps are kind of in the back seat on the Windows Phone 7. It really is the operating system and this tiled interface that really is foreground. And Microsoft's making a big bet that you'll like that. Their ads, in fact, and we'll start seeing these ads, they're going to spend $400 million over the next couple of months to try to get you to buy Windows Phone. Their ads are going to have a lot of people who are staring at their phones and are doing things like walking into trees. They're not living their life. And they're going to aim this phone, and I don't know if this is a market or not, but they're going to aim this phone at people who say, I don't want to live in my phone. I just want to look at it, know what the next calendar appointment is, know who called, and get out. Get in, get the information, and get out. That's how they're pitching these phones. So the front screen is very customizable. There's a lot of information coming at you. It's a dashboard. And that's what they're really trying to do, is a dashboard to your life. Quick glance. I know what's going on. Put it away. As opposed to people with iPhones and to some extent Android phones who are, spend the whole, look what's going on in there. They don't even know what's going on in the outside world. I was just at a conference in Las Vegas yesterday, the Blog World and Podcast Expo. And you'd go to dinner with somebody or you'd go to a party. You go to a party in Vegas, And all the nerds are sitting around looking at their phone. What's going on? They're tweeting and they're interacting in the phone. I think Microsoft's mocking that, but I have to say, that may be what people want. What it does say for the iPhone is what a compelling experience it is. So Microsoft's being very gutsy and bold, and I commend them. We need that. Boldness, is a virtue. I'm very excited about Windows Phone 7. It will be out on AT&T starting November 8th with the Samsung Focus, which is, it's funny. They're starting with the best one first. It's the thinnest. It's got the best screen. It's a 4-inch AMOLED, Super AMOLED screen. Beautiful screen. All of the Windows Phone 7 phones have the same basic specs. Microsoft's watched what happened at Android, and you get a variety of phones with different specs, and they said, no, wait a minute. They're all going to have the same processor, gigahertz Snapdragon, gigahertz processor. They're all going to have the same 5-megapixel camera. Some of them will have more memory than others. They're going to have 8 or 16 gigabytes. They will all have SD cards. You know, they made a hardware reference standard that everybody has to adhere to, and I think that's a good thing. So if you buy a Windows 7 phone, you know, Windows Phone 7, I'm sorry, you know what you're getting. The Samsung looks really good. For people who want a slider keyboard, LG and Dell are doing phones with slider keyboards. The LG will be available on the AT&T network sometime later after November 8th. Later in the month also, T-Mobile will sell two phones. They're going to sell the Dell phone, which is for the BlackBerry fans, it's the slider, the keyboard slides down. So you do everything one-handed, you know, so it's a thumb phone. So they'll also have T-Mobile will also have a pretty nice phone from HTC called the HD7, I think they're calling it, which is a very nice phone with the biggest screen of all of them, a 4.3-inch screen. All the phones will be $200 with a new contract. That's amazing if you think about it. These smartphones cost more than any computer. Over the life of the phone, you got to use it for 2 years. You got to pay $200 up front and roughly $100 a month, you know, $90 to $100-plus dollars a month for 2 years. We're talking more than $2,500 for this little device that you're locked into spending. Now, you know, admittedly, you get full-time internet access. You get, you know, phone calls. You're getting something for your money, but that's a lot of money compared to a desktop computer. Now, a high-end desktop computer costs less than that. So this is where the innovation's happening in the smartphones. And I commend Microsoft for taking a bold leap forward, and we'll watch with interest. It's great. Hey, we got a horse race. That's the good thing for consumers. Competition is good. 8888 Ask Leo. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to call. We could talk about, you know me. I love to talk about anything on your mind. Maybe you saw an ad and you said, what the heck does that mean? What is a super heterodyne receiver, and do I need it in my cell phone? Anything like that. 8888 Ask Leo. I'm glad to help you spend your money. If you spend it unwisely, I'm glad to help you see if you can get it back. Help you get that thing working, that new thing that you love, to get that working. 8888 Ask Leo. Barry's our first caller of the day. Barry's in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Barry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Got a question for you. I've got a Pogo plug in my house that I use for a central hard drive, and all my computers point to a central iTunes folder.
I love Pogo plug.
It's really cool.
It's so great.
So I got a place in New York, and I can access my files through the Pogo plug, but you have a solution so I could use the iTunes program on that computer?
You can't. Apple doesn't want you to do that.
Uh-huh.
So you've got all your music centralized onto. I'm going to explain what a Pogo plug is because people who are listening going, "What is he? Pogo stick? What is he? What?" So I love the Pogo plug, and everybody, I'm glad to give them a Pogo plug because everybody ought to know about this thing. It's a piece of hardware that you buy, not very expensive. I think it was $100, right?
Something I got like it for $45 on Amazon.
What? Great deal. Great deal. They have two or three models. They have the hot pink model for home users and then a black model for business. And the idea is the Pogo plug is just an interface. You plug it into the wall. Actually, do you? Yeah, you plug it into the wall. You plug your Ethernet. Now, this is important. You plug an Ethernet cable. You need broadband into this. An Ethernet cable to this. And then it has something like four USB ports. I have the old Pogo plug, which only had one USB port, but I think the current Pogo plug has, is it four USB ports on it?
Three on the back, one on the front.
Yeah. And so the idea of that is you can plug in storage, any kind of USB storage onto your Pogo plug, and then the Pogo plug puts it on the internet. It also puts it on your LAN. So if you're copying files, and this is how you're using it, Barry, that's successful. You put, I don't know how many hard drives on it, but you got a lot of storage on that thing now. You put all your iTunes music on there. Doesn't include a hard drive. That's why it's so cheap. It's an interface to the hard drive and the internet. And now you've put, in effect, you've turned that hard drive plugged into it into a network-attached drive, a network-attached storage that all the computers in your house can see, right?
Right. I can stream video over this thing. Wireless.
Yeah, it's got some nice software that automatically, if you choose to, copies all the media files on attached computers over to it. And there's a lot of really nice little things like that. But it depends what you want to do. I guess if you just want to play music, you can mount the Pogo plug, you know, run the Pogo plug software, and then it appears on the remote computers. Does it appear as a hard drive? I can't remember.
Not, it does on the ones that are on the local network, but if you...
Only locally. Okay, that's the problem.
You got to go through...
So iTunes will not play back unless it sees it as a drive. Because what you're doing is you're telling iTunes, this is where my music's stored.
That's right.
And you tell it, well, it's stored on the Pogo plug. Now, one of the beauties of the Pogo plug is for anybody else on the LAN, it's going at full LAN speed. So if you have 100 megabit LAN or a gigabit LAN, a local area network, then it's very fast. In fact, with a gigabit LAN, the Pogo plug drives appear pretty much as local hard drives to all the drives in the house. You know, it's very fast, fast enough to play video back. The problem is that internet thing. It's if you can't mount it as a local drive, iTunes can't be told to use it. So I don't think you can use it. You know what's funny is you can use it on your iPhone. There's a Pogo plug application on your iPhone that will let you play back the music that's on that Pogo plug on the iPhone.
Right, I've got that.
So I guess what you could always do is plug the iPhone into a speaker.
Is there a difference to tap that central folder over the internet?
Yeah, there are ways you could do it. I mean, what Pogo plug basically is doing is they're doing what's called FTP, file transfer protocol, but hiding all the complexity from you as a user. So when you put that Pogo plug online, you can share, and I do this with the radio stations, by the way, when they have me do commercials or stuff for the radio stations on the Tech Guy network, I just put it on my Pogo plug here and I send them a link and they can get the file. They don't even, you know, I make it public so they don't even need a password or anything, and they get the file. It's beautiful. But what's really happening behind the scenes, if you know computers, is file transfer protocol. It's just doing it transparently so they don't have a password and login and all that stuff. Where if they do, and by the way, you can't have that. It's hidden. It's simple. But I think the only way, I mean, you could get really fancy and start running something like a Hamachi server at home.
Yeah.
That makes your LAN look like a local drive. Remotely.
I was looking at Hamachi this morning, but that looks like it goes through, again, it goes through somebody else's server, right?
It does. It didn't used to, but when LogMeIn bought it, they kind of screwed it up. So, because you should check. You used to be able to run your own Hamachi server, in which case you wouldn't need a third party server to do that.
Right.
But I think LogMeIn made it when they bought it. They made it so that you ran it through LogMeIn. But you could do VPN. There are ways that you could make that your LAN appear local. But, you know, the speed is going to be the issue, and I don't know if it's going to be the ideal way to play that music. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my good buddies at Squarespace.com. Twit.com. If you're ready to set up your own website, you can make it your own professional-looking, slick site as easy and simple as possible with Squarespace. I use it, my friends use it, and I encourage you to give it a try free. Go to squarespace.com. Try it for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy, use the code TECHGUY for 10% off the life of your account. Squarespace.com, offer code TECHGUY. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's me, 8888. Ask Leo is the phone number. The cable wars are back in New Jersey and Long Island. And Dr. Mom is on the line with us. Dr. Mom is a regular in our chat room. We love having her. She's a physician and has been through this before. It seems like Dr. Mom, they wait until there's something big on TV and then they get you. I guess the Yankees are going to be playing some baseball this week.
Exactly. When ABC Disney went off the air, they timed it for the Oscars. Now Fox News Corp pulled off the air and it's been timed for the playoffs and the football weekend.
And what happens is you see ads in the newspaper from Cablevision, your cable company, saying it's Fox's fault, and from Fox saying it's Cablevision's fault. Cablevision, I've always thought of as one of the most forward-thinking cable companies in America. They understand, I mean, they have great internet access, don't they?
I use Fios for internet access. Oh, well. That's much faster than what Cablevision. But Cablevision pulled one on us last month. After the digital transition, it was supposed to be not legal for cable companies to scramble over-the-air channels.
Right.
So that you could simply screw the back of the cable into your television and get your channels.
Right.
Well, Cablevision went to the FCC and without a hearing got permission to say everybody has to have a box on every television and they're going to charge us for it.
Cable companies have been trying for ages to do this. They want you to rent that digital box. There's a couple of reasons. One is they can get more channels on the same cable because digital requires less bandwidth for them than analog. But a lot of people, myself included, I don't want the cable box. Not just the rent. I just don't want the complexity of the cable box. I have analog channels here, and you know, Comcast did exactly the same. Well, not exactly, but there's something similar. They use this digital transition to imply that you had to go digital cable. They're not related.
It's not just that. They basically said we were all thieves, the same complaint the RIA has been making, and we're going to scramble everything, so you must rent a box. Ugh. Now, I can understand them saying, you have to have a box. Give me a cheap box. I don't want premium channels. I have Roku. I have Hulu. I have a Mac Mini attached to my television. I can get that kind of content elsewhere. But right now, I can't get local news, and they scrambled public access.
What?
Public access.
I think that should be illegal. I mean, they're required to do public access as community service so that you can watch city council meetings, so that people in your local area can have TV shows, even if they're unprofessional. And they're required to do it by FCC law, but now they're scrambling it. I mean, obviously they're messing with you. So now what happened here with this? This happened last time with Disney now, or ABC, I should say. But now they're doing this with Fox, right in time for the baseball playoffs for the Yankees.
Right. It's News Corp, which is the parent company of Fox. And in New York area, there's something called My9, which is a secondary channel for Fox shows.
So it's not on your cable anymore?
No, I get this scrolling ad, and I sent you a link to the Cablevision website, which shows the ad they're showing.
All right.
And it just says, this is all Fox's fault. We want to go to binding arbitration. Fox won't listen to us. Fox has done this with other channels. They did it with Dish TV, and I think they were off for several weeks with Dish Television.
Well, what's going on is cable companies that provide you, or satellite companies that provide you with the signal, pay channels to have those channels on the cable, right? And then they charge it back, and they make a profit. They're a middleman. So,
exactly.
So if you're Disney, if you're HBO, if you're Fox, you will be paid a little bit for your channel, 20 cents a subscriber, $1.20 a subscriber, some amount per subscriber. And then, Cablevision or Comcast or Dish or DirecTV charges the customer and they add a little tack on a little, they make a little money. It makes sense. But what's happening is they're fighting over how much per subscriber to pay Fox. And Fox says, we want more. Cablevision probably saying we want less.
Well, I think what part of it also is Fox wants more. The only channels that have been pulled are Fox 5, which is the baseball channel, and what I mentioned before, My 9. They did not pull Fox News.
Yeah.
That's still on the air.
Well, they don't want to mess with those guys.
don't get me started on those guys.
They don't want to mess. They know there's some power there. They're not going to. No, I think this is, though, what it is, they did it before. It's so blatant. They wait until there's programming you have to have. And by the way, with Major League Baseball, cannot get elsewhere.
MLB.com.
Can you watch the game on MLB.com?
I get it on about a 20-minute delay on the Roku box, and I'll miss. I just turn off the spoilers.
Yeah, that's not so bad. Yeah, I forgot Roku also offers Major League Baseball. And if you have the At-Bat application, I think you can pay additional amount of money and get streaming on your phone. You can get the baseball game. But again, probably with some delay. I think this is just, you're going to see a lot more of this.
This is the last step, as far as I'm concerned, in unbundling. When it gets to the point, the only movie channel I get is HBO. When they offer a Roku channel or something similar to Hulu, the cable company's going bye-bye except for local broadcasts, because we're far enough out from the city that I can't get over-the-air channels. Yep. I'm past the digital range. Nope.
Lil, thanks so much for joining us. Dr. Mom is a regular in the chat room. Dr. _Mom in the chat room. Say hi to her, and it's always great to talk to you. Thank you for the update.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
I appreciate it. Take care. So that... I think Lillian is exactly right, that is exactly what we're going to see. And it's not the end of this. In the next few years, what you're going to see is some, and this always happens when old industries are dying, new industries are springing up, the old industries are hanging on by their fingertips. And that's what you're going to see, is this disruption. But what it really is going to do is speed up the transition to the point, which, by the way, this is what I think all consumers ultimately want. Something called a la carte TV. Now, you may say, I don't know, what is that? Do I want that? I don't know what that is. Let me ask you. In fact, we could take some calls about this. If you had the choice of buying not a channel, not a bundle of channels, but buying the shows you want and just the shows you want, wouldn't you do that? Right now, the way it works is, this happened in the music industry. They sold you a CD full of bad songs because that one song you wanted was only available that way. Right now, the cable industry is selling you a bundle. You can't just get CNN. You can't just get Fox News. You got to buy a bundle that has 12 different channels. They're making you buy more than you want. Well, I'm saying not only unbundle the channels, which the cable companies have fought against miserably, I'm saying don't even bundle channels. I guess with Fox or CNN, they don't really, you would buy a whole channel. But there's many, many networks, HBO maybe, ABC and NBC, where you only watch two or three shows a week. You'd buy those shows. We're very close to that right now. You go to iTunes or Netflix or Amazon, you can buy, I'll give you an example, Glee. If you want to watch Glee, now I don't get to watch it when it's on. It takes about 24 hours before the most recent episode gets up. But then I can watch it commercial free for 99 cents. Isn't that what we really want? Just to pick our show. It certainly gives you better control of how much you spend. It gives you, in theory, you'd spend less. I think one thing people don't like is this kind of multiple bills from multiple sources. But what if you just, you just did it through Amazon, it was kind of automatic, or you just did it through iTunes, it was kind of automatic, came in on your credit card, you buy a la carte. Isn't that what you want or not? Do you prefer the way it is? That's what we're going to see, is this battle. Cablevision, in fact, I talked to a Cablevision executive 5 years ago. He said, we see this coming, where consumers really just want bandwidth from us. They want undifferentiated bits and then use that bandwidth to buy the shows they want. We don't think there's a business model for us. We do not want to sell undifferentiated bandwidth. I think of it as wholesale bandwidth. They want to sell premium content. There's more money. It's a better business model for them. We just want the bandwidth. Give me the bandwidth. Give me a Google TV or a Roku box or Apple TV or a Boxy box. Give me some way of connecting to the internet and getting my shows over the internet. That's, at least for geeks, that's what we want. If you make it easy enough, I think that's what everybody will want. 8888 Ask Leo, this is we're coming to the end times for the cable business. And what happens when you get to the end times for business? They fight bitterly. They're cornered. And it's by... And who gets the short end of the stick? Well, we consumers who just want to watch a baseball game, for crying out loud. Just want to watch the Yankees and the Rangers. That's all. That's all I want. And instead, these big giants are fighting, News Corp and Cablevision. These big companies are fighting, and it's like dinosaurs. When dinosaurs fight, you know, the cavemen get out of the way. Chris is in the UK, in Kent, England. Chris, is it similar in the UK? I guess not, because you have the BBC, which is run by the government, and then independent channels. Are you there? Oh, Chris is listening to radio, so in 40 seconds, he's going to answer the phone. Tell you what, I'm going to give him time to get caught up. Maybe we'll talk to Chris about the situation there. Do you want me to do a Carbonite right now, Tammy? Is that what you'd like? Oh, I turned you down. I'm sorry. Are you still there? Carbonite Pro. All right, let me talk about it. I turned Tammy down when I turned Chris down. Carbonite Pro! It's backup done right. You've heard me talk about Carbonite. Now I want to talk to the small business owners about your backup strategy. Yes, this is a painful subject for a lot of people in small business. You do have a backup strategy, right? Well, just imagine what would happen if you were to lose all your business data. Devastating. Devastating. So that's why we talk about Carbonite Pro. Carbonite Pro is a great solution for small businesses. It takes the advantages that Carbonite gives consumers, you know, automatic backup to the cloud where it's always safe, even if the worst happens to your data, you know, in the office. You can get it back at any time from any computer, even with an iPhone app or a BlackBerry app. Those apps are free. But Carbonite Pro is designed for business, so you can have as many users as you want. You pay only for the storage you need. You have a centralized administration console, so you know who's backed up and who's not. And it's very affordable. It starts at $10 a month. If you've got 8 users, each of them backing up, say, 5 gigabytes each, I think that's $40 or $50 a month. It's very, very affordable. And it's automatic, and you know, you don't need an IT department to administer it. It just works. CarbonitePro.com. If you're in business, a small business, you need Carbonite Pro. Oh, I hear the magic sound. It means we're running out of time. I'll tell you what, Chris, hang on. He's on Skype, so it's not costing him anything. We'll talk to you next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. You want to talk about the death throes of the cable industry. We can talk about that. Chris is on the line from Kent, England. Thank you for being so patient, Chris. He's on via Skype, so I presume I'm not eating up too much of your money here.
Oh, that's fine. No, I've got unlimited bandwidth. That's not a problem.
Good. Yeah. What now? I was going to ask: How does it work in England? Do they have cable companies?
We have. We do, but more likely it's satellite. We use Sky Corporation or BSky,
which is a Rupert Murdoch company.
Yeah. So there is we buy the basic. You get the basic packages, then you add on for like sports, movies,
and very similar.
Yeah.
You also pay, do they still do this, a license fee to the government for owning a TV?
We do that for Matt Pace for the radio content and the TV content. So, for example, the BBC has no adverts and they don't do sponsorship because we're paying them, whereas all the other channels like ITV and Five get the money from the ads.
I kind of like that model. How much is a television license?
How much is a TV license?
It's just kind of built in, right? Everybody just pays it. It's like a tax.
It's 130 a year.
Wow. 130 pounds a year? Wow.
130 a year, yeah.
That's like $20 a month, $15 a month. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I just wanted to get the view from across the pond. Now what can I do to help you?
I'm looking at the new Xbox. I've never owned an Xbox. I've only got like two and a Wii. And a lot of my friends are saying go for the 250 gig model, but I'm thinking on price point, I'm only going to play like 4 games. I'm not going to install them. I'm thinking if I can get away with a 4 gig model.
Yeah, I think that's fine, and you will be able to add an external hard drive to that. So if you decide you need more storage, you can get more storage later.
I've got like 2 spare 4 gig USB sticks, so I was going to plug them in anyway. I've got them around the house. That can be 12.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good way to go. So get the 4 gig model, and then you can put in USB keys. You can put in even external hard drives and use that for storage. The reason you would need more storage is exactly what you... Well, there's two things you should consider. One is you can copy games to the hard drive, and that's nice because if a disk gets scratched, you can still use it because it's on the hard drive. They load faster, things like that. And the second reason you might want a big hard drive is I think we're going to see more of this. More content can be stored on the Xbox 360. Now,
so for extra content, like if you're federating games.
Television shows, movies, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Now, what they're saying in the chat room is, hey, it's only an extra, at least in the U.S., only an extra $50 to get the larger storage. Is that the same in the great?
It's about an extra £40-50, but at the moment, Amazon have got it for $144, and it's got a free HDMI cable and 2 free games. So it's on a good offer at the moment. So I'm thinking...
I would say go for... That's a heck of a deal. That's on the 4 gig bundle.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the States, it's $249, and I think that is an excellent deal. Now, I have to say, I ordered the 250 gig, and the reason I did is I wanted the Kinect bundle. I wanted that new camera they put on the top of the Xbox, and then you can dance and play games.
Well, I'm going to be playing an F1 game. I'm going to be playing Forza. That comes free with it, Forza or Forza.
Oh, that's good. So that's the driving game. That's a great game. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not a Kinect, I mean, I don't see you using it, going like this to play a driving game with your hands like you're steering. I don't see people doing that. That's kind of dorky. So maybe you're right. Yeah. I mean, it's your first Xbox. You don't know how much you're going to like it. You do get all the media extender stuff that you would get with any other Xbox. Yeah. That's nice.
I've got a Vista laptop, so I'm guessing I can stream from that. And I've got iTunes on the Vista laptop, so I can stream like my media over to the Xbox.
Right. I mean, the deal in the States is a 4 gig with the extra wireless controller, a year of Xbox Live Gold, and 4,000 Microsoft points. You can buy those online games with and media for $250. That's a great. I think that's a great bundle. Microsoft's getting very aggressive with the Xbox. That's similar to the bundle you're getting in the UK. I think it's fine. You can always. My point is, you don't have to worry about the storage because you can always add it later. It'll cost more than £40 or £50 to add a big hard drive, but if you've got USB keys and stuff, you can always.
I've looked up, the 4 gig model is basically flash that they put on the motherboard. So that mean that the slot drive is free. So I could just then buy the 250 gig hard drive they would put in the normal, like 250 gig model, and put it in the 4 gig if they come out with that as an accessory.
Like, I don't know if you can open it up and put in a hard drive. That I don't know. It's the one on the outside. It's the one you just click onto the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could always do that.
You can pull, like, the 250-gig one is removable, so you can put it out and you can hold it. So
exactly.
They might sell them separately, so I can put it in the 4-gig later.
They have in the past, you're right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Sounds good, Chris. Go for it.
Thank you.
And then call me back and let me know how you like it. You know, we have really some tough choices right now because you've got the Xbox 360, and Microsoft's very aggressive on that, but it does not have a Blu-ray player in it. The PS3, the PlayStation PS3, has a Blu-ray player in it. So if you've got a HDMI compatible high def display and you want to watch the best high def movies, I think a PS3 is a great deal because you get the Blu-ray player and you get the gaming. And if you want, you know, I mean, a lot of families love the Wii if you want that social gaming. It's a difficult choice. I do like, you got to choose by game, right? You got to choose, well, which games do I want? And then if the game that you want is available on both Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, which is often the case, not always, but often the case, then do I want to pay extra for a Blu-ray disc? I solved that problem just by buying them all. Angela, Nova Scotia, Canada. Hey, it's good to talk to you again, Angela. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I'm having some problems with music.
You and your music.
I know.
Now what?
Well, I finally got the darn thing. I got all the tunes in there from all the CDs I'd burned a few years ago. But I'm converting them to like they were AAC format because my dad didn't have a radio that understood the MP3, but now he does. And I mean, when I converted them. Some of the songs, I didn't notice until after I burned the CDs when I switched them over, but some of the songs, they're sounding real noisy, like flap, flap, flap sort of thing. I'm not sure if it was there first, and it's more.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's figure out if we can solve this. We'll do it right after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy is brought to you by Carbonite. Backup done right, off-site. And it's great price, too. Carbonite, you got to back it up to get it back, so try it free right now. Go to carbonite.com and use the offer code Leo. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, talking about cell phones and television, computers, the internet, home theater, all that stuff. My phone number is 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free anywhere in the U.S. 888-827-5536. Apple's having an event on Wednesday. And not a big event, although every time Apple has an event of any kind, because of the secrecy Apple is so adept at exploiting, there's always huge speculation and a lot of press attention. The reason I know this is not a major event is because Apple's having it at their own campus at the town hall, which is a small theater there at One Infinite Loop, small enough to only hold a few hundred journalists. When they want a big event, they hold it in San Francisco, up Highway 101 a piece at the Yerba Buena Center, where you can hold 1,000 or more journalists. So this one's a small one, and in fact, the invitation features an apple with a lion peering out around the corner. And I think that has given rise to a lot of speculation that probably all this is Apple announcing the future of its operating system, OS X. You know, they name it after every version of it after the big cats. The last version is the Snow Leopard. Before that, the Leopard. They had Tiger and Panther and Lynx and Puma. So they're running out, frankly. Big guess. Lion is a pretty good guess as to be the next one. I don't know if it'll be OS 11 or OS 10.7. OS 10, 10.7. I think it's probably 10.7. And, you wonder, well, is this going to be a big deal? And the rumors are flying. This is one of the ways Apple gets the press's attention, is by saying nothing and letting the press speculate wildly. And I think sometimes you'll hear on your local news some of this speculation as if it's, we know Apple's going to release a new MacBook Air. We know Apple's going to release 10.7. No one knows nothing. So if you hear something like that, just add, according to rumor, to anything anybody says about Apple until Apple does it. That includes a Verizon iPhone, a touchscreen laptop, according to rumor. According to rumor, there is one new feature in the operating system that's a big deal. Remember earlier at the beginning of the show, I was talking about the fact that personal computing has kind of plateaued. We've done everything we wanted to do. It's hard to think of a new feature you could build into your operating system or your office package or your desktop computer that would be a revolution. We're in the evolutionary stage, and even then, it's not very exciting. Look at the last two updates of the big operating systems, OS X from Leopard to Snow Leopard, Windows from Vista to Windows 7. They're essentially exactly the same operating system. They've just polished the corners a little bit. They've sanded down some of the rough spots. They've buffed up the shine. That's literally all they've done. Well, not literally, but in some cases, you know, they buffed up the Aqua interface. They they polished up the Windows. That literally, they did do that. The Aero Glass is just a little bit shinier. It's little things, which is fine with me. I don't think we need to have a revolution every year. A minor upgrade for speed and reliability is fine. It does everything we want it to do. So if you believe the rumor, and again, I'll underscore rumor, then I guess you'd have to speculate that Apple would be doing something to its operating system to make its desktops more like its best-selling phone and iPad. And I think that one thing you might credibly say is Apple is adding multi-touch to its desktop. And I'll tell you, as an iPad user, I could believe that because I've gotten so used to using the iPad with my finger and zooming and pinching that every time I sit down on a desktop or a laptop, I actually touch the screen. If I'm not thinking, I go, that's a laptop. You have to use the mouse and keyboard. So I could see absolutely Apple adding multi-touch to its desktop operating system and perhaps releasing a laptop, maybe the Air. They haven't updated the MacBook Air for a couple of years. Maybe a MacBook Air with touch. So it kind of makes sense in the product line that you've got the iPad, you've got the iPhone, the iPad, and then the big jump to the 13-inch MacBook Pro. What if you put something in between the iPad and a MacBook Pro that was, say, a 13-inch screen, same size as the MacBook Pro, but with the touch features and maybe even some compatibility with apps in a very lightweight computer that had a full-size keyboard? That might, there might be a product there. So, again, this is speculation. Apple doesn't say. They won't say till Wednesday, but that's possible that what they're going to talk about is I think we're pretty sure they're going to talk about an update to their operating system, Lion, they'll call it. Won't be available Wednesday. It'll be available probably, 3 or 4 months from now, depending on how the testing goes and how the development goes. And perhaps at that time, when the release of Lion happens, they will release new hardware with touch. A touch laptop. I could see that. Wouldn't get all excited about it, but it's not going to be a Verizon iPhone or Verizon iPad. Actually, there is a Verizon iPad. Here's a kind of a surprising news story. Verizon said, yes, we're going to sell the iPad. But it won't be a 3G iPad. It won't use the Verizon network. It'll be a Wi-Fi iPad. And when you buy it, you will get to bundle for $120, which is exactly how much more the 3G iPad costs than the Wi-Fi iPad. You'll be able to bundle with it the Verizon MiFi, so that you can get internet access on your iPad with a little device that you keep in your pocket. It's about the size of a credit card. It isn't quite the same as a 3G iPad. It doesn't have the GPS. So if you wanted the GPS, you'd be better off to buy the AT&T iPad, 3G iPad. Same price. You're going to have to use the AT&T network, though, for the 3G versus the Verizon network on the MiFi. And the MiFi has pretty good pricing, I think, for data. The base data is 1 gigabyte a month. And what was that? Was that $10 or $15? And then they go up, I think, $25 for 5 gigabytes a month. And apparently this MiFi will only be usable with your iPad. In other words, it's a terrible deal. if you're going to buy a 3G iPad, if you want to use the iPad on the 3G network, buy the regular 3G iPad. Then you get GPS. You use it with AT&T. AT&T is fine for the iPad. Absolutely. All right, let's get back to the phones and poor Angela in Nova Scotia and her music problems. Now, you had, Angela, all this music encoded as AAC, which is, by the way, AAC is not an Apple standard, even though everybody associates it with iTunes. It's, in fact, the successor to MP3. It was created by the same company, Fraunhofer, that did MP3. Same people said, we can do a little bit better. They made AAC. But you decided you wanted MP3. Why?
Well, he upgraded, and I convinced him that you could slam a whole lot more tunes on a CD when he finally got an upgraded radio that understood MP3. So I'm converting them and kind of cutting down his music collection because he likes CDs.
So you're reducing the quality of the encoding.
Yeah, I guess so. I thought MP3 was...
Yeah, if you're... AAC is higher quality... For the same bit rate.
Okay.
So when we encode music using these compression technologies, the way you know what the quality is by the bit rate, by how many bits per second of data you're storing. And a traditional, when you buy it on iTunes for a long time, a traditional AAC encoding was 128 kilobits 128 kilobit AAC is better quality than 128 kilobit MP3.
Ah, okay. Headed back. I was thinking backwards. Is that?
Yeah, MP3 is lower quality. The only advantage MP3 has is it's more widely supported. It's the lingua franca.
It seems that it kind of squishes the tunes kind of together so you can put...
All of them are squished. All of them are squished. They're all lossy compression. They take some of the audio out. They hope that the audio they take out will not be something you'll hear. Yeah. But of course, you do hear it. There is a slight difference. Not a huge difference. And I think most of us have gotten used to listening to compressed audio. So first of all, I would say if you've got them in AAC and you're happy with the quality on AAC, there's no need to go through all that trouble to make it MP3.
Right. What it was, I was cutting down the discs that he has because he likes switching out discs. So the more tunes he can get on a CD, the longer he can leave the CD in the player and not worry about it because he has it in his truck. So that's why I was converting them, so he'd have less CDs to muddle through.
Right. And does his truck not play AAC?
It does. It does. But he has like 70 CDs and I cut it down.
Right. So when you take the audio CDs and you rip them, you're converting them into a digital format. You could rip either as MP3 or AAC.
Mm-hmm.
The size of the file is not determined by that's called a codec, a compression decompression algorithm. The size is not determined by the codec, but by what bit rate you choose. So if you want it smaller, you could choose 64 kilobit, but it won't sound very good.
Gotcha.
The minimum you should choose for either AAC or MP3 is 128 kilobits. And I would say the sweet spot on MP3 is 160 kilobits or 192 kilobits. Those will be slightly larger files, but the audio quality will be better. If you're using AAC, you can go one step down, roughly. In other words, the AAC encoding is better, so you can make the files a little bit smaller and get the same quality. That makes sense. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo is a phone number. Larry Jackson, Georgia, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Larry.
Let me get you out of my other ear here.
Okay.
So we won't get no feedback through my nutty head. Yeah, I go by Larry the high-tech redneck. You like that?
I like it.
Yeah.
A high-tech redneck. Welcome to the show.
that's
good. Are you going to do your own radio show, Larry? You can do your own radio show with that moniker.
You got that right. I may try that later on. I'm a Rick and Bubba fan, too, by the way.
Oh, we love Rick and Bubba.
Yeah. But
I haven't done that show in a while. I got to call in. Say again, where do you get this clock? So, Rick, Larry's watching the video feed. We do a video feed at live.twit.tv. You ever wanted to watch a radio show being made, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
But you can watch my talking head. And behind me, I have a big old clock. You know, it's funny because when we built this little studio, my engineer at the time, Colleen, and I went down to Costco.
Yeah.
With a big, we got one of those big Costco wheelbarrow-sized shopping baskets, and we went down to get a big TV.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the TV, we put that in the basket, and then we're walking down the aisle, and I see that clock you see behind me. I said, oh, that'd be good to have. Little did I know, that's probably the most important part of the broadcast. I don't know why, but if I take that clock away, people will go crazy. And yeah, I guess it's because then it's live, right?
Yeah, it gives you a reference point back there.
Yeah.
And another thing I wanted to ask you about...
But let me tell you, they don't sell it at Costco anymore. The company that makes it is called Skyscan, SKYSCAN, and it's my understanding that they actually discontinued this model. It's nice because it's so big. Those numbers are so big. It shows the date, the day, and the temperature.
Temperature in the corner, yeah.
Yeah, which is really nice. And it's an atomic clock. It's a radio clock. So, yeah, it gets the – yeah, with them, Skyscan's made a bunch of these for a long time. So does Oregon Scientific and other companies. And they use the radio. The radio and the clock will get the date and time from the atomic clock in WWV in Denver, Colorado. So It's kind of nice, or I guess it's Fort Collins. So it's kind of nice. It gets the time automatically. There are others like it.
Have you had a chance to check out the V-Bean yet?
The what? The V-Bean?
Yeah, V-E-E-B-E-A-M. It was on the at the Demco conference the other day. They announced it, and if you hadn't checked it out, what it is, it plugs into UBS, got a little antenna, and it uses UBS whatever Wi-Fi, and you put the box on your TV, and it's wireless. And you can get your internet content.
So the idea is, and you know, Intel's building this into their laptops now. They call it wireless digital, but it's the same idea. You have a box that plugs into your TV set, and then you have a USB plug that you plug into your laptop. And then whatever's on your laptop now goes to the box via wireless, which then plays it back on your TV. So it's effectively a way to put the content of your laptop onto your screen. Be good for presentations, but also if you're watching a movie on your laptop. Nowadays, people watch Netflix, Hulu, and so forth on their laptop. It is a WUSB device, wireless USB device, that creates a connection from your laptop to your TV. It's a little better than Wi-Fi. It's a little higher bandwidth. So let me see how much, just out of curiosity, how much this little guy costs. $99 for the V-Beam standard definition. If you want the high definition, $139. I'll tell you what, Larry, let me buy it and try it before I recommend it. I can see all sorts of potential problems with this. But it seems like, you know, that'd be convenient for people who want to put their computer output on the TV without connecting them via wire. Generally, you'd want to connect it via wire. And certainly Wi-Fi is, and they're right on this page. They say, well, Wi-Fi is not fast enough. That's true. It's not the ideal way to do it. I think there are better ways to do this than hooking up a computer to your TV. And if you do want to hook up a computer to your TV, like a home theater PC, I think it's best to do it wired, not wirelessly. But nowadays, instead of having a whole computer dedicated to that, there's all sorts of great solutions like the Apple TV, the new Apple TV, the Roku, which I'm a big fan of. That's the one I'd recommend, ROKU.com. And if you've got an Xbox or a PlayStation 3, you can hook those up to your TV. They already are to play the games, and you can add media capabilities to them. You can buy, you know, stream Netflix from your Xbox 360. You can buy Amazon TV shows on your Xbox 360, watch them. The Xbox will even stream content from your desktop as well. So there are other ways to solve this. I haven't tried it, Larry. I'll take a look at it. I'll get your review, but my inclination is this is probably not what I would recommend. Generally speaking, my experience with these kinds of devices has been poor. John, Hawthorne, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
How you doing?
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
I'm really low-tech, Mr. Low-Tech here. Sony Bravia KDL46XBR4.
Love those TVs. Gorgeous.
Yeah, it was a good one. I went online and I stacked up all kinds of paper, and it was when I
good choice
saying it was one of the top. Mm-hmm. I notice when I watch it, if someone is moving around a background, it might be lines or something. There's like a halo around them, and
yes.
Mostly this is just on TV. And
now this is probably what you're seeing is LCD refresh.
Run it back, and because I have the TiVo, and I go frame by frame. And it seems like there's a blur around the mouth, you know, sometimes when they're saying something like it's maybe the, I don't know if there's a computer in the TV or how it ever works, but.
Well, I'm not sure exactly, but LCD screens are slow, especially older ones, which this is, and sometimes that can cause that halo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. portion of the Tech Guy is brought to you by Stamps.com. Why wait in line at the post office when you can print your own legal U.S. postage right from your Windows PC and your printer with Stamps.com? I'd like you to give it a try today. All you got to do is go to Stamps.com, use the offer code Leo, Stamps.com. It's just fantastic. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Well, we've been talking in the chat room about our last caller's Bravia issue. He has a, I don't know, I would guess a couple-year-old Sony Bravia LCD TV. And he says it's a weird glow around people's lips when they talk or when they move. And my initial reaction is it could be display response time. The older LCD panels had a slow response time. A response time is defined as the amount of time it takes a television or a display to go, a pixel on that display to go from all the way off, deep, deep black, to all the way on, bright, bright white, and all the way off again. On a, you know, old-fashioned glass tube TV, a cathode ray tube TV, that response time is zero. It's instant. On an LCD, it can be half a second. It can be a long time. So, if you have an LCD display with a slow response time, something on the order of more than, say, 10 milliseconds, you might see a kind of a blurry effect behind motion, an artifacting behind motion. It's hard for me, of course, from the description to know exactly what's going on, but that could be one thing. And that's why modern LCD panels, especially for televisions, have much faster response times. But it also could simply be a calibration issue. You should make sure you've got your TV fully calibrated and especially pay attention to the sharpness setting. Thanks to Rap in our chat room for suggesting that as one of the possibilities. He actually provided us with an article at LCDTVBuyingGuide.com on calibration that talks about sharpness. So that could be it. Could also be an artifact on standard definition television that you don't see on high def. If you don't see it on high def, but you only see it when you're watching, say, your local broadcast, it could be an issue of the television's software is upscaling the SD signal. The standard definition signal is, you know, about 400 lines from top to bottom. Actually, that's the maximum. It's probably even less, more like 360 lines from top to bottom. A DVD is 480 lines. A high def signal is at least 720 lines, twice as much. So what happens is the television gets this low quality signal. It up converts it from 360 to 720. And sometimes you get some artifacts, some unusual looking things caused by that upscaling. If you don't see the haloing on high def signals or DVD signals, then that's probably what it is. So calibration possibly, check to see if it's in standard definition only. If it is, you know, that you're kind of stuck with it. That's what the TV's doing. You could, you're kind of stuck with it. But my suspicion is that it is in fact not either of those, but just really a slow response time. And again, there's not much you can do about that. That's the TV. Newer TVs do not have these problems. They're better circuitry in all of this. He's saying he gets this kind of strange fuzz whenever people are talking around the mouth area and the halo around the heads. Thanks to the chat room, by the way. This is a great place to go if you want to be my brain, be the kids in the back of the class. They're really smart, and they often give us great information. And you can find that at irc.twit.tv. Or, you know what, best thing, go to our website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And you'll find a link to the chat, the live video, all the information from the show right there. This is episode, believe it or not, 709. In a continuing series trying to understand the tech industry. To Eagle Rock, California we go next. Carl on the line. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Leo. Love the show, and it seems like today's the TV issue day. What you were talking about earlier, where I finally got fed up with satellite and cable and connected a PC to my new Panasonic plasma since it has a PC input on it. And everything's working great. Did the Netflix thing, loving life with the Hulu and all that stuff. But I have a very annoying problem. Whenever I open the browser and therefore when I'm watching a movie or something, I get a high-frequency hum or tone. I don't know what you'd call it. And I've tried everything regarding changing cables. You know, all I have is that little mini plug output from my PC that connects to the mini plug input on the TV. I've tried switching it to RCAs, going into my receiver. I've done just about everything, but I can't seem to.
Yeah, you want to get away from that analog out of the computer.
Well, how do I do that? I've even done the multi pin into an HDMI on my TV, but I don't get audio that way.
Still get that whine. Oh, you don't get audio. Right, because HDMI doesn't carry audio out of the computer. It should, but often computers do not send audio out of the HDMI.
So what do I do?
What you want is digital audio out of the computer. What's happening is you're getting analog audio out of the computer. And the analog audio is getting a high-pitched whine because the computer, when you open the browser, is working harder. It's actually it's basically introducing RF into the audio.
That's my
guess.
Yeah.
So do you have an HDMI connect out of the computer?
Out of the computer, no.
You're using the DVI to HDMI.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the problem. HDMI carries audio on television gear, but it doesn't carry. But you're not getting HDMI out of the computer. You're getting just video off the DVI. If you can figure out a way to get digital audio out of the computer, I would. The problem might be a lip sync issue, which might even be more annoying than this whine. But if you can certainly get a USB audio adapter that converts it to analog, they're not very expensive. I had something called, I think, a Hi-Fi Link or something like that. But you could find them, you know, online at Newegg. Lots of people sell them. It's a USB connector with an analog jack. You plug that into the computer, and then the analog out of that gives you a much cleaner sound because you basically take bits from the computer and do the conversion farther away from the CPU.
Oh, okay. So it would be a USB out of the computer into the the mini plug input on the TV in this case.
Right. Right. And now you might also check to see if the TV has a digital input. You might be able to do something even better, which is send the computer bits.
Well, can I go from a USB to an HDMI, from a USB into a U?
Well, that's what you're buying. You're buying a converter that does that. It's a USB into the computer, and then it has analog audio. It has a mini jack out.
Uh-huh.
And you've even used the same cable you're using right now. You just won't be plugging it into the computer anymore. You'll be plugging it into a USB device.
I see. But is there something
that... Is it a laptop or a desktop computer?
It's a desktop.
Somebody suggested this in the chat room, and this is true, too. You could also get a video card with HDMI out that would give you both digital audio and video. The thing is, the TV wants digital everything.
Well, even when I connected it to my receiver, the audio into an auxiliary RCA input on my receiver, I'm getting that hum.
Right.
Yeah.
The hum's coming from the computer.
Right. Yeah,
it's basically the computer working harder, and whining about it.
What you're getting is
radio frequency interference. And this is, by the way, you know, even when people do Skyping, I often recommend USB headsets versus analog headsets. Computer audio, analog audio out of computers is notoriously noisy because think about it. You've got in there a chip that's running roughly at FM frequencies. You know, it's introducing a lot of radio frequency into that area. The sound card's in the computer, right next to the CPU. Not unusual that you open a browser and the computer goes, and you start hearing coming through the audio.
Okay, so go to the.
I suspect it. Aaron B's, by the way, got it on the nail on the head. He says, "Is it when you have more white on the screen?" And usually, that's the case.
Is it more? Actually, I think I noticed it during dark scenes too.
It's the computer. But so what you want to do is clean up the audio coming out of the computer. And what you'd like to do is use digital all the way through. So if there is, for instance, a optical out of the computer, a Toslink connector on your sound card, and there's optical into the television, you'd use that instead.
I don't have that.
And you can buy an audio. You could replace the audio card in the computer with a better audio card. That might solve it as well.
Digital
would be the best way to do it. So buy a sound card. They're $30 that has Toslink digital audio out. Look in the back of your TV, see if it has digital in. If you could go that way, that'd be the best. You can even buy an HDMI converter that'll take DVI from your video card and digital audio, optical audio from your computer and mix it together and make that HDMI into your TV. That would also clean it up.
Wow. I wish I could write that fast, but I'll...
We'll put it in the show notes.
Okay.
TechGuyLabs.com. So the idea is your TV wants digital. Your computer's giving it analog audio, and not only that, it's adding noise into the analog audio. When it works harder, it puts more noise into it, and you're starting to hear it.
Yeah.
So what you'd like to do is get the bits out of the computer. There's no noise in bits. Get those bits out of the computer. Either give them directly to the TV or do the conversion of the bits to analog outside the computer to get rid of the whine.
Okay, great. I'll try that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Monoprice.com, by the way, is a great place to go for this. The only issue with going to USB then to analog is that there may be a little bit of lag introduced by doing that, and that lag could be just enough to make you notice that lip sync is bad and really annoy you more than the whine ever did. This is why a lot of people do home theater PCs, but it's tricksy. The interface, and particularly tricksy, is the interface from the computer to the television. Because this is, it's almost an impedance mismatch. It's two different devices. It's like different train gauges, railway gauges. They just don't quite, and you have to get adapters that make them match. And it's tricky. Not easy to do. Hey, I got to tell you something about Nod 32 before we get our next call. Brandon on the line from Fayetteville, North Carolina. His computer won't start. Tim is in Marina, Florida. He wants something better than Outlook Express. Well, that's pretty much anything, but I'll give you some good choices in a second. Before we do that, Lo, let me tell you about Nod 32, the best little antivirus ever. If you use Windows, you need Nod 32, CNET's editor's choice, 5 out of 5 stars. You can try it free for 30 days. It's lightweight, it's effective, it's fast, it gets rid of all the beasties and the bugs, not just worms and Trojans, but spyware, adware, phishing scams, rootkits, all stopped cold in their tracks by Nod 32. 30 days free if you go to eset.com/Leo, eset.com/Leo, or call 866-935-ESET. If you use Windows, man, you need Nod 32. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. More of your calls to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, rocking and rolling, 8888, ask Leo, that's the number. I think that these home theater PCs are just an interim product at this point. You know, even Microsoft, which used to push Media Center Edition of Windows, you know, that was a big thing. It includes that Media Center software with all versions of Windows 7, but it doesn't really push it anymore, does it? And remember, they made these special Media Center devices that would hook up and run Windows on your computer and all that stuff. That's all kind of taking a back seat, and I think it's because it's so darn complicated, and there's so many little issues like this whining come from the computer and so forth. To make this work, you need a device that's designed, in my opinion, designed for a TV with the right hookups, with HDMI out, and all of that. And that's why you see the Roku box, the popcorn hour. There's all sorts of boxes that go to designed to bring the internet into your TV. Now TVs come with internet connections. A lot of them have internet connections and have software running on the TV. Google TV, which was announced a couple of weeks ago, will be out in a couple of weeks. Same idea. It's a box from Logitech. You hook up to your TV and it gives you, you've got a keyboard and a mouse. And much easier than a home theater PC with much of the same functionality. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. Let's go to Tim in Marina, Florida. He's next. Hey, Tim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Actually, it's Mariana, but that's okay. It's the truck.
Oh, Mariana. I misread it.
It's where you get off the interstate when you're going from Tallahassee to Panama City.
Who could forget it?
Oh.
I apologize. What can I do for you, Tim?
What I'm looking for, and I heard your comment earlier about Outlook Express. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but the thing of it is as every improvement they made with it, they kind of changed and rearranged filters, and typical of Microsoft, they decided what I was going to do, and it didn't fit.
Right. They've killed it. You know, there hasn't been an update to Outlook Express in a while. Have you noticed that?
Like
5 years. They don't make it anymore, dude.
I've got it.
So I can see why it's time to get a new one.
Well, it's the last remnant on my Vista machine that's stopping that machine from going to Windows 7. I've got three other machines on Windows 7. I've got couple of laptops running XP just because they still run. And then I got one old Jack Mac G4. But the problem I've got is because I'm operating basically two or three businesses, I've got about 10 or 12 email accounts. And to keep my sanity and keep organization, I've got them. I make good use of alias emails. Like, and it's a good spam defense, too, because I'll have like mail at something or other. And then I'll have aliases like contact info, sales support, so on and so forth, and I'll sort them into folders. Well, as at Windows Live, I can't search all. I've got to go to each individual one.
And oh.
Extra feature of it, they sort out the junk, which has to be individually moved into the deleted, and it took a one-step process and turned it into a 15-step process, and that's a pain.
So you do know about Windows Live Mail, which Microsoft is replacing Outlook with, and it just won't do what you want it to do.
And the folders are not flexible as they were in Windows Mail.
Yes.
Outlook Express. And then I run through the gamut. I have Outlook, so I install that, and I can sort. It's got everything except you can't make a message rule based on two because it assumes it's all going to be within one account. Well, I may have contact for this one and contact for that one. I want them all going in the same place, so it lacks that flexibility. So I went out and I installed Thunderbird Express, and something's missing out of that. And I'm looking online, and there's like a bajillion different clients, and I'm saying, I'm not going to install each of these one at a time. I'm going to ask Leo.
Well, you have some special needs. There are, as you're absolutely right, there are a lot of clients. You've gone through the first two that I would try. Of course, Windows Live Mail, which is Microsoft's intended replacement for Outlook Express. Actually, you tried Outlook, which is kind of the big brother, and that didn't do it. And then you tried Thunderbird, which is also free and very good. Now it's like, well, now you're going to start playing with the alternatives. And there are a heck of a lot of different kinds of email programs out there.
This Eudora, Incredimail, Opera, Zimba, Bat, Becky, Evolution, Pine.
I like the Bat. That's the one that seemed to me that was going to be the next thing I was going to recommend. Have you tried it at all?
While I was on hold, I just did a Google search and I came up with this.
Yeah.
40 and
I used the Bat for a while. Now I use something called IMAP. Which is a little different than POP3 Mail. And the Bat is something that's really kind of designed around IMAP, although it will work with POP3 Mail. I would take a look at the Bat. You could try it free for 30 days. I realize it's a pain in the butt to try all of these things out. And I don't, I kind of understand your setup. And the thing about searching across accounts, I think, is probably the one that's stopping you, isn't it?
That was the extra irritation on...
Most of them will do the filter. All of them will do the filtering you want to do, where it says, well, who was this sent to? Oh, okay, it was sent to this. Put them in that folder. Most of them, as far as I know, will search across folders. That's a weird limitation that it wouldn't search across folders.
Within Windows Mail, if you go to, the general setting where it has all of the email coming in,
yeah,
one place where the search does not work. And I'll have some
I see.
Certain person that came into something, and I don't remember which of my companies it came into. And if I go to quick views, there's no search.
Have you tried Gmail at all? I mean, I wonder if Gmail...
I'd rather have an installed client because I mean, a number of machines, and I know what IMAP, and the limitation to IMAP is if you're on a limited connection, you got to wait for all of those folders to download and coordinate and all the rest of it. And
actually, you don't. Most IMAP clients will cache and will be pretty quick on, I mean, I guess you're right. If it's a really slow connection, the server updates might take a while. But most IMAP.
Think about this. If you've got 12 or 15 email accounts and they're all going through the handshake.
Right.
Yeah.
That would take a while.
Yeah.
Well, you have an unusual set of needs. The most powerful Windows program for email I know of is the Bat.
Okay.
From RIT Labs. It's a little bizarre. To be honest, it's a little different, but I think that it might do what you want it to do. It's one of those programs where the guy who writes it, it listens to users and adds features as they request them, which means it has a lot of interesting features.
Is the fee for licensing on that per machine? Because I operate on about four different machines.
No, I don't think so. I think you buy one copy.
And it'll
work on all the machines, yeah. But you could try it for free, and I certainly would do that first because it sounds like you have some unusual or very specific needs.
Well, it's you can appreciate that.
Yeah,
you wear a lot.
Yeah. No, I know. And I have multiple accounts, and email is such an important part of our lives these days. And frankly, for most of us, our email boxes become databases of information that we need to mine.
Yeah, that's the other.
That's where everything is. Who's going to move all those addresses into some other thing? That's it. That's the database. So a good email client is great. I'll take some suggestions from the chat room. Keep listening. Maybe they'll have some ideas for you, Tim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my friends at Citrix, makers of Go to Assist Express. If you're in the IT support business and you need to support users remotely, you got to try Go to Assist Express. Do it right now. Go to assist.com and give it a try with the off. I guess if you go to goToAssist.com/Leo, you can try it free for 30 days. That's it. Yeah. GoToAssist.com/Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo's the number. Brandon is our next caller, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hi, Brandon. What can I do for you today?
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Brandon.
Last time I spoke to you, you were on the way to China and Korea and all that over there.
Yeah, that was last summer. That was a great trip.
Yeah, and at the time I had told you I was going to Hong Kong, and I had set up a little blog for that.
How did that go?
It was great, I actually went back to China this past summer, so I have a bunch of new pictures up from this last time. I went to northern part of China.
Oh, I'm jealous. What's the URL for the blog?
It's myhktrips.com.
M-Y?
H-K, and then
H-K trips. Trips.
Mm-hmm.
Or trips?
Trips.
TripsPlural.com.
Yes, sir. And I haven't been able to upload all of them.
This is beautiful.
But I did put a link to my Flickr page, so there are a lot of them are on my Flickr page.
How fun! What kind of camera do you use?
Well, it's a D70S. It's an older Nikon, but I still love it.
I love my D70. That was a great camera. Yeah, still have it.
Yeah, it really is. But, you know, I have been having some problems with my my HP desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, you know, when I turn it on, the lights and stuff come on, like where the LEDs are and stuff for showing there's power.
Right.
And, but I don't get anything on the screen. And I thought maybe my graphics card had maybe burned out. So what I did was, I replaced the graphics card, and I still didn't get a signal.
And I always suggest trying other things before spending money.
Right. Well, I was able to take it back.
Good. Yeah. I guess it's this, and you buy a new. So you want to kind of, in all troubleshooting, you want to do the easiest, cheapest things first, and then work your way up to the more complicated, more expensive solutions. Like, for instance, test the cable first, or maybe find another monitor, swap it out, see if it's the monitor or the cable. It may not be the video card. In fact, the video card is probably not the first thing I would suspect. You say you see the lights, you hear the whine. Do you hear beep, 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 or anything like that coming out of it?
No, sir.
Okay, so those are the post codes. You know, if a computer can't start up, it will beep at you. If it says I'm not gonna get far enough to display. An error message. I'm just going to have, all I can do is beep. It will beep. And these are called post codes. Post is short for power on self test. So all PCs, when they first start up, do a power on self test. See if the RAM's there. See if the hard drive's there. You know, see if it can really, you know, display anything on the screen. Failing any of those tests, it will beep at you. So it's getting through the post, I would guess. But what we don't know, I mean, it might not even be doing the post. I mean, the lights coming on just means that it's getting power.
Right.
The hard drive, you hear the hard drive spin up, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that means that's getting power.
And see, I was thinking maybe my motherboard might have been messed up.
Well, it could be, you know, it could be anything. It could be the hard drive. The first component to fail on most computers is the hard drive. So that's why I wouldn't jump to any conclusions. It's, you know, it's, oh, the display card, because I can't see anything on the display. Well, yeah, you can't see anything on the display because it's not booting up. So you're not hearing any beeps at all.
Right. I'm not hearing anything except the fans and hard drive.
Usually you'll get one beep. So you're not even hearing one beep.
No, sir. But I can check again. But I mean,
do you remember if you used to hear a beep when you turned it on?
Actually, yes, sir. Once it got to the, you know, where the logo for HP.
Oh yeah. You'd hear the, oh, just a beep. Yeah. So you're not even getting that. I'm thinking something pretty severe is gone out here.
Okay.
How old is this system?
Well, it's only a year old, and it failed as soon as the warranty went.
Yeah, of course. We waited till day 366, and it said, I'm tired. I'm going to take a break. Yeah, that figures. You know, you can go. It's a desktop?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You can open it up and go through it, make sure all the cables are properly connected. You know, sometimes a cable falls off, that all the cards are. You've been in there already. You put in a new video card. All the cards are seated properly. I'd take a look at the RAM as well, make sure that's in there and didn't pop out.
Okay.
But it sounds like something severe has failed, like the motherboard, because I'm pretty sure you should be getting one beep.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was afraid.
Yeah. The fact that it's not beeping at all means it's not even getting through the power on self test at this point. Mm. You might, always unplug all the USB devices. Sometimes a USB device, believe it or not, can keep the system from booting. Unplug all the stuff that you can eliminate, except for obviously the keyboard and mouse. This is a tough one. I don't know what, it's not an obvious flaw. It sounds like it's dying really early before even the power on self test, which usually means a bad motherboard. It could be the power supply is working. I'm obviously getting power because you're hearing drives spin up. You're seeing lights come on, but it could be that it's not giving you enough power to get any further. It could be a number of things. Power supplies fail fairly frequently. Greg, Pasadena, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Greg.
Oh, hey.
Hey, come on over to the phone, Greg. How you doing today? No, that's quite all right.
I love your show. I've been trying to get through with this question for quite a while now, and I'm just thrilled and delighted to finally be able to ask you about network attached storage and how best to implement it in my home environment for my specific purpose.
Okay. You know, let me just explain what it is before we go any farther and find out what you need specifically. But network attached storage is basically, the idea of it is, it's funny how, and I've mentioned this before, as the computer industry matures, we're doing more and more things that used to be relegated to big IT departments and offices and so forth. You know, we now have routers in our house, switches in our house for networking. And network attached storage used to be a fairly sophisticated idea. It was a hard drive that was attached to the network, not attached to a computer per se, but just on the network. It really, what it is it's a headless computer. It's an enclosure that has some software, has an operating system, has one or more hard drives in it, but no keyboard, mouse, or monitor, just an Ethernet jack. You plug it in, it's on the network, and you can see it from any computer on the network. You can modify it, you can set it up using your browser and browse to it as if it's a device on the network, and you know, and do things like, say, back up automatically or run a media server, a client, things like that. So that's what a network attached storage is. It's used for backup, and sometimes it's used for centralized storage of media.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm looking for, although I'm not convinced that an actual network attached storage device is precisely what I want. I mean, you had a caller earlier that really got me thinking about the Pogo plug, which is a different type of NAS.
It is. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah.
Interesting, but after reading up on it online, I don't think it has enough features for what I'm looking for.
Right.
See,
okay.
I'm a professional video editor, and I've got not, and in addition to all of the projects that I do myself and my vast DVD library that has already been ripped to MP4s,
okay.
I've got now a kid on the way, and we're going to be looking at, you know, my hours and hours of family videos, and I don't want to have DVDs or Blu-rays cluttering everything up. I want to dump all of that onto a server, along with my 80 gigabytes of music that I've been collecting since my college radio days, and photographs. Now, if I take all of this irreplaceable media and drop it onto a NAS, first off, I want to make sure that I'm going to be able to play it back and play it back smoothly and access it from not only anywhere within my network, but securely outside the network on the internet. And putting all my eggs in one basket, I want to make sure I can back this up on something. And I've read some things that your sponsor, Carbonite, doesn't necessarily back up NAS.
Yeah, it won't work with servers, right? It has to, it's the local data on the hard drive.
There's my rub. I've got, you know, hours of music, videos, and hundreds of photographs that I want to put on a NAS, but I also want to be able to back it up.
Macs or Windows?
Actually, mixed environment. I've got Windows computers here, but since I'm a video editor, that pretty much means I'm working with Macs, and we'll have a Mac in the house.
You know, this is what you want to do is actually less uncommon than you might think. In fact, it's almost exactly what everybody who has an NAS wants to do. If you're doing anything more than backup, you're doing all of those things you just described.
Well, that makes me feel more confident.
Yeah, this is a very common application for network attached storage. The only thing that you can't do is it's not as fast as a local hard drive. So I presume you're not going to want to put projects that you're editing on this NAS. You're going to keep them locally. Yeah.
All of my editing projects, I keep at work where we've got fiber channel.
Yeah. So, you know, the reason I asked Windows or Mac is if you're mostly Windows, the Windows Home Server is Microsoft's solution to this. HP makes them. They call them the Media Smart. It's a little box, very easy to use. It does all the backup stuff. It is, you know, it works with Macs, but it's really designed for using with Windows.
Okay.
It has a media server, so you can stream media content. It has backup software. It has remote access, which is very nice. So that thing that you wanted to do, which is maybe the most tricky thing, which is getting to that data from outside. Hang on the line. We'll talk about some other options, too. Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask. Leo, as we get more and more data on our computers, more and more computers in our homes, we want to access that data from all different computers. We want to access that data even from outside the home network. It gets a little complicated, and that's where these network-attached storage solutions come in. Greg is in Pasadena. He wants to solve this problem.
Oh, yeah.
And the good news is, you know, you got a lot of choices. There's the Windows Home Server, which is Microsoft's attempt to provide a solution that's easy to use for people who use Windows.
Yeah.
So that's a good one. Asus and HP both make them. I'd probably get the HP one. I have used for years a Netgear network-attached storage system called ReadyNAS. This one, instead of running Windows like the Windows Home Server does, runs Linux in the background, but you don't really need to know what operating system. You don't even see the operating system. You're just running a browser to interface with it.
Right, Leo.
And a number of people have recommended a company called Synology, SynologY.com. They have nice NAS solutions that have all the features you want. I'm looking at their DS410J. And it's a 4-bay NAS. That means it has 4 drives, so lots of storage. You can have up to 8 terabytes. Some of that 8 terabytes will be dedicated towards redundancy, however. So you might get only, realistically, 6 terabytes, only 6 terabytes of storage. The nice thing, though, about the redundancy is if one of those 4 drives fails, you don't lose any data. You just pop another drive in. Yeah. This supports DLNA, which means you can use it to broadcast to your TV. It supports iTunes Server, Windows Media Server, FTP, HTTP, even BitTorrent. So it's got all the different things that you'd want to do. You can access it from remotely. You could even run your own website.
What about backing it up?
Now, there's a couple of solutions there. These drives act as a backup, of course. In fact, they have both server and client backup, which I like. So server backup means you don't even have to put anything on your systems around the house. The NAS periodically goes and queries each system and says, give me the data, I'll back it up. So you've got the data on all of your systems. You've got it collated into that NAS. And now you're saying, well, but the NAS, what do I do for the NAS? And that's a little more tricky. You can run software on the NAS that will back it up to external servers. Jungle Disk, for instance.
Jungle Disk, okay.
Yeah, Jungle Disk is great. Now, that's not going to be cheap. The nice thing about Carbonite, it's cheap.
Yeah, Carbonite is pretty awesome in that
regard. But you're talking a ton of data. Jungle Disk will back it up to Amazon's S3 servers, and you'll pay. Now, S3 is relatively cheap, but it is not as inexpensive as Carbonite is. But you know, and I would not recommend, if you've got terabytes of data, I would not recommend off-site backup that way, online, because it's going to take forever just to back it up.
It's true. That's very true.
I mean, imagine streaming on your connection a terabyte. How long is that going to take?
Like forever.
Months. Yeah, like forever. So probably what I would do is not consider the NAS the end of the line on the backup, but also do some other solution, maybe have two of them and rotate them out, something like that.
Okay, and just hope that the place doesn't burn to the ground or take the...
Well, yeah, I'm not a big fan of, as you know, of hope when it comes to backup. Ah. And you've got a lot of baby pictures. Hope is not a good solution. There's a lot of different things you could do. You could, for instance, have separate photo backup using a photo solution like Picasa Web, or I use SmugMug.
Oh.
You know, you can always mail grandma a hard drive a month and say, here's the data.
Well, that's a thing right now. Hard drives are not particularly expensive.
They're cheap.
When I first got into video editing, I spent a month's pay on a couple of 10 gigs.
Absolutely.
Now I can get that on a thumb drive.
You can plug this Synology drive, plug an external drive into the Synology drive, mm-hmm. back up all the data from the Synology, and bring it to work.
That's an interesting. Now the Synology set is it's got bays. So I could then...
Most of these are like that. Yes, exactly. Most of these are like that. This is like the Drobo. You're probably familiar with the Drobo, where it's basically what you're buying when you buy a NAS is not storage, but an enclosure with some firmware, some software running on it, and then you populate it with drives. You pop the drives into it.
Yeah, I was looking at the World Book Edition, the Western Digital.
Mm-hmm.
It's an enclosed case. And I like the option of popping in newer, bigger drives as they become available.
Absolutely. And that's where Drobo excels and Synology excels. You're going to be using RAID 5 or something similar on the Synology. So if a drive fails, it's going to fail over and you can put another drive in. These are more pro solutions. And you're a pro. You've got a lot of data.
You have no idea. Well, actually, you might.
I do have an idea, but we use in a professional environment, we use a storage area network, not an NAS network attached storage, but use something called a storage area network, which has fiber optic cables. It's very expensive. It's $1,000 for every machine you want to connect it to. Setting, you know, the SAN itself is $20,000. And then for everybody you want access to it is another $1,000. But our editors can work on video. Three or four of them can work on the same SAN, work on the video all simultaneously.
Exactly what we've got at work, and we're actually looking to expand it, and it's going to cost us $30,000-$40,000.
It's hideous, but you don't need that, and that's why I asked you. You're not going to edit video on this thing. You're really using this as a centralized storage for your media. That it has an iTunes server, it has a Windows Media Server, so you can run any computer. It will see that you don't even have to do anything special to the Synology or to the ReadyNAS. It'll see it. It'll play the music off it, play the video off it. I think these are a very good solution for people. Leo Laporte, good luck. Have fun, Greg. Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Phone number 8888. Ask Leo if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. You'd like a little hand-holding on the information superhighway. Let's go to Orlando in Catalina, Puerto Rico. Hey, Orlando. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. How's everything?
Great. How are you?
I could be doing better.
Uh-oh.
I started my own podcast 7 weeks ago. I'm in the field of technology. I work in video and audio production in, over here in Puerto Rico. And I got shut down.
What?
Yeah.
Shut down by whom?
By PowWeb. They suck.
They're your web hosting.
They're my web hosting company. I started my podcast 7 weeks ago. I had 7 chapters, one per week.
Why did they shut you down? Were you using
shut down my website because I was having too much bandwidth?
Yeah, you were using too much bandwidth. Yeah.
Yeah, but well, the thing is, you know, they could have sent me an email a couple of days before doing that, not just shut me down.
They should have warned you.
That's right.
That's not so nice. Well, that now, do you have nice. Access to all the data, or is it gone?
No, they're going to put me back up, but I had to erase all my MP3s, and now I'm looking for a hosting company that will host
right.
MP3 files.
Here's what I would suggest. It's a company called Libsyn, LibSyn.com. It's short for Liberated Syndication.
Okay.
And most internet hosting companies, you should read the agreement, will absolutely limit you. And if you're doing, it's usually plenty of bandwidth for a web page for text. But if you're doing audio or even worse, video, you're going to use up a lot more bandwidth than the 100 megabytes or even a terabyte or 2 terabytes that they offer a month. And at that point, they if you read the agreement, they say, we'll shut you down. So this is the deal with Libsyn. And you, by the way, you can keep that PowWeb site. You don't have to get rid of the site. You just put the audio or the video from your podcast on Libsyn and link to that.
Yeah.
So that way you people go to the same place they went before, but when they click the link to listen to the podcast, it doesn't come from PowWeb. It comes from Libsyn. Now, Libsyn, the way Libsyn's pricing works is kind of cool. They don't charge you for bandwidth at all. They only charge you for storage.
Okay.
So you pay an amount based on, you know, if it's a weekly show, you probably pay $10, $15 a month. It depends on how much of data you have up there.
Usually and, I was paying about 50 megs per chapter.
Yeah, that's not much. The max that the unlimited I think is $30 bucks a month. So it's fairly affordable, and you never get bit because of the amount of bandwidth they're using.
I get to keep my feed burner feed.
Yeah, all of that's still coming from PowWeb, right?
Yeah.
So here's the deal. So
something that'll disrupt my current setup as little as possible. Because I put right. a lot of hard work into that, and, you know, just moving everything out is a pain in the neck.
I think you're probably going to go for their classic account. It's $15 a month with 250 megs a month of storage. That's enough for 5 shows.
That's right.
And you get the RSS feed. They automatically do a feed that works with iTunes and all the other clients for you. You get a Flash player, which you can embed on your PowWeb site.
Yeah.
And you get stats, which is very nice.
Yeah.
So and that's for basically for unlimited bandwidth. Notice there's no in their deal. They don't mention how much bandwidth. That's because they don't charge you for the bandwidth.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's designed for podcasters.
Let me ask you a couple of other questions, if you'll bear with me.
Absolutely.
I've heard people talk about a service where I can publish a phone number, and when people call, they'll get a recorder. They'll record a message and the system will shoot me an MP3.
Right.
Email.
Yep.
Anything about that?
There are a lot of different ways to do that. The free one is Google Voice. I'm pretty sure Google Voice is available in Puerto Rico.
Well, it should be.
I'm pretty sure you're still in the U.S. So
yes.
It's voice.google.com. It's free. Now, here's the deal with this, Orlando. With Google Voice, you will be giving out a new number.
Yeah.
You may not want to do that, but that's how Google, and it's free. That's how Google Voice works. You can have that number forward to any or all of your phones. So I have a Google Voice number. That's what's on my cards. It's what I give people. When somebody calls that number, it rings, you know, I have multiple cell phones because I have to review one. It rings all the cell phones. It rings my home number, my office number. It rings five different lines. It even rings Google Voice Chat on my website. I could pick up any one of them. But if I don't, it'll play back a message. And by the way, another nice feature of Google Voice is you can categorize your contacts. So some of my contacts are in the family category. Some of them are in the friends category. Some of them are in the co-works category. Each of them gets a different outbound message. So my family, it says, oh, hi, I missed you. I love you, but thanks for calling. Just leave a message. I'll call you. And my friends, it says, hi, how you doing? I'm not here, but leave a message. And my coworkers, it says, don't call me at this number. And so they get the appropriate message for who they are. And if they're not in that list, they can get a fourth message, or they can get no message at all, and it can just go straight to voicemail. I don't know you. I don't want to answer the call. It can go straight to voicemail. Now, the voicemail, just like you want, will get emailed to you as an audio file you can listen to. But yeah, I like this even better. It also transcribes it and will text message you with a transcription.
And can I only use it as a recorder and not answer it at all?
You can.
Because that's-
you can say, everything goes to voicemail. I don't want to hear a single ring.
Okay.
But the drawback to that is, well, actually, I take it back. I think you can port your regular number over to it. Can't you, chat room? I think you can now. You can port your regular number over to it. So you can even use it with your existing number. I love Google Voice. Now, there are other companies that do this for a fee and are more elaborate. For instance, for my business, I use a virtual PBX system called Grasshopper. That allows me to have multiple mailboxes, it's more sophisticated than Google Voice. But if what you want, Orlando, is it goes to voicemail and sends me a message with an MP3 on it, Google Voice is a great choice.
That's the deal. And my last question, and I'll let you go.
Okay.
I have a computer that won't start up if I unplug it from the wall. I mean, you know, I unplug it, I plug it.
Wow, what a surprise. Is that a feature? I'm sorry. I had to tease you on that.
I unplug it from the wall, I plug it in again. It won't start up. I take out the battery from the motherboard, I put it back on, and it starts.
Yeah. Yep. So I think what happens is you got a dead battery.
No. The battery's working fine. It's a G4. The computer works fine. But, for example, sometimes we get a power outage, and what I do is I go and turn off the UPS because after a while it'll, you know, drain the battery. So then I go turn off the UPS. When I turn the UPS back on, the computer won't start. I open it up. It's a G4. I remove the battery from the motherboard. I put it back in, and the computer starts.
I don't know exactly what's going on there. That's interesting. If you just plug it into the wall without the UPS, do you get the same weird behavior?
Absolutely.
Okay. So it has nothing to do with the UPS.
No.
It has to do with this backup battery, the motherboard battery that's in there.
Some people have told me it's corrupt RAM.
Yeah, it sounds like the PRAM is corrupted. Do they still use PRAM? I think they do. In the old days on the Macintosh, you'd do, what was it, Command Option PR. You'd have to use four fingers to hold it down when you rebooted, and you'd let it bong at you a couple of times, and that would clear the PRAM. I would try that.
Okay.
Just to see if that happens. So restart the computer, hold down Command Option P and R. While it's restarting, it'll bong at you. Keep it holding it down for two or three bongs just to make sure you're really clearing that PRAM out, and then let go and see if that fixes the problem.
Okay, thanks a lot. I'll try that.
Thanks, Orlando. Great to talk to you.
Out there trying PowerWeb, stay away.
Yeah, take that, PowerWeb. That's what you get for cutting off Orlando.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. Take care, Orlando. Appreciate it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you've got a question, a comment, I'd love to hear from you. You want to diss your ISP, you can do that too. Now, I got to talk about backup real quickly before we get to our next caller of the day, who is Jack in Durham, Pennsylvania. He wants to do a little cloud computing and wants some recommendations. Before that, though, I do want to recommend Carbonite Pro to all of you in small businesses. You know about Carbonite, don't you? That's the automatic backup, the online backup that goes, you know, through the internet to the cloud there, where it's completely safe and does it automatically. It's a really great solution for anybody with a desktop or a laptop computer, and they want to make sure they save their stuff. But it's so much more important for businesses. If you're in a small business, think about it. What would happen if you lost the data that your business runs on? the spreadsheets, the accounting. What if it's gone, how do you get the business back on its feet? You got to have a good backup. And a good backup doesn't mean that hard drive right next to the computer. Not for anybody. That hard drive is vulnerable. If there's fire, flood, somebody breaks in and steals everything, there goes the backup along with the original. You got to have an off-site backup. All businesses know this. I wish all businesses implemented it. You can easily and affordably with Carbonite Pro. CarboniteProducom. You try it free for 30 days. Lots of features for small business. Centralized dashboard, make sure that everybody's backed up. You can see which systems aren't backed up. But it also there's no charge for individual users. You only pay for the data you use. And it's very affordable. Starts at $10 a month. That's for 20 gigabytes. So you got 10 computers, each with 2 gigs, $10 a month. You got 100 computers, each with 2 gigs, $100 a month. It's a heck of a deal. And it's always available on any system. As you just log into your Carbonite Pro account and your data is there. They've got a free iPhone app, free BlackBerry app, lets you access your data. It's secure with strong encryption, so nobody has access to your data except you. CarbonitePro.com. Go right there right now and try it for 30 days. Great people with a great service for small businesses. CarbonitePro.com. Let's go to Durham, PA. Jack is on the line. Hey, Jack, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. What can I do for you?
Setting up a small office, and the people at this office do not want to have any on-site storage of data. They just want to do everything on the cloud, but they want to be able to map the drives to the computers. They're all Mac, so that everybody can just go to all the files at all times from wherever they're at.
One good way to do this is Dropbox. You're probably familiar with that. I don't know if it's enterprise grade, but we use it all the time. Now, it does have local storage. Do they not want a copy on their hard drive at all?
No, they don't.
Why is that?
Can't figure it out. They just don't want to have anything on their local computer.
Now, Dropbox will make a local copy, and the reason you want to do that, it's faster. You're working on local copies, but it automatically synchronizes. Hold on. We'll talk more about this when we come back. It's an interesting challenge. I like it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. You got a question, a comment, a suggestion? We're talking with Jack, who's got some clients with an unusual requirement. What are they, in the mob?
No, part of the problem in Dropbox is one of the guys in the company is an artist, and his files are normally anywhere from 50 to 100 megabytes easily. So it doesn't take a lot of those to fill up a hard drive. And when you
right.
Dropbox and you have everything stored on everybody's drives, it really becomes an issue.
Sure. So, and well, now I got to say, he's an artist. Is he going to be working in Photoshop with Photoshop on a file that's in the cloud?
No, he's actually using Corel.
He's got to have local storage.
He does have local storage, but he's going to save everything up to the cloud also so that everybody.
So he wants cloud backup.
No, they want to use it live. They don't want to use
it. Well, he cannot use it live. It will not be fast enough. He will use it live for 3 seconds, and he'll say, oh, this sucks. I mean, he can't use live. What, is he going to edit files with Corel in the cloud?
No, he does that on his computer.
That's called local storage.
And then saves them to the cloud when he's done for the day so that the other people in the company can access those files.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a terminology thing from my point of view. He has a copy locally.
Yes, he does.
But not everybody. Okay, so some of them will have local storage, some of them not. What they'll learn very quickly is some things are too slow to work off the cloud. And photo editing is obviously one, video editing is one, but even sometimes spreadsheets are too slow to work in the cloud. If you have a big Excel spreadsheet, you want it local while you're working on it.
Right.
You know, you can use Google Docs for all of this stuff. Google Docs will let you store any file type anytime. It'll sync it up to the cloud. Everybody logs in as long as those. You actually, it's kind of nice because you have control over who has access. You don't share it globally with the company. You can share it with a department or an individual, account by account. So if the guy works on a CorelDRAW file, he saves it to his local hard drive, then saves a copy to Google Docs in the CorelDRAW format. He doesn't have to use the Google Docs format. In the CorelDRAW format, he can then say, and share this file with Joe in accounting and Teresa in sales and no one else. And they have access to it. No one else has access to it.
What do you think about Rackspace's Cloud Drive?
Excellent solution. Yeah, if you're a little more serious, Google, nice thing, Google Docs doesn't require a lot of sophistication. But on the other hand, it's a little bit limited. People think that you have to use the Google Word processor to use Google Docs. You don't. It'll store any file type of any kind. So you can use Microsoft Office, everything. But if you, yeah, if you want a solution that is looks more like a mapped hard drive, then I think Rackspace is an excellent solution.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah, I think they're very, I think they're very powerful. I think that's a great solution.
Alrighty.
Hey, thanks for the call, Jack. I appreciate it. Let's talk right now with the Gizwiz. Dick DiBartolo is Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and it just happens that he's a gadget hound. Has been. For decades, he's used every gadget since the first answering machine. I'm not kidding, am I?
No, not at all.
I mean,
actually, I had a rock that I decided should be round in shape, and I made the first wheel.
That's how long he's been a gadgeteer. Hey, Dick, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
Hey, you know, before I forget, where I'm pushing toward my birthday wish. Birthday's Tuesday. I'm trying to hit 10,000 followers on Twitter.
Are you kidding?
To you, I picked up 500 last week.
Wait a minute. You came on this radio show with a million listeners. I'm not kidding. A million listeners. And you said, for my birthday, there's only one thing. Only one thing I want is for everybody on Twitter to follow the Giz Wiz. And you got 500 people? That's all?
Well, I need 1,300 by Tuesday.
I'm ashamed.
I know. You think I should offer the money? What am I doing wrong?
What am I doing wrong? I feel like I failed you.
No, you could not fail me.
1 million people listening, and all I asked was, yeah, in a sense, in a very real sense, I have failed
you. In this
you.
One instance, just for my birthday, the only thing I ever asked in an entire 6 years was that more people follow me.
So you have 8,742 followers right now. That's all. And if everybody listening to this show, if everybody listening to this show, I'll tell you what, only those of you whose names begin with vowels, if only you followed Dick, you'd have 100,000. Forget 10,000. You'd have 100,000. What is what? I'm shocked. Shocked.
Yeah. You know what? It made me think. Are you really on the air?
I mustn't be. I think that this has been a lie that has been perpetrated by the premier radio networks, who are just telling me, they're sending me a check every week saying you're on 131 stations, have some money, and that's it. There's actually no one listening.
That's the case. That's fine with me.
Oh yeah, just take it.
If you're getting a check, I'll live without the fault. But it would be fun to hit 10,000 on my by my.
This is all I ask. I'll tell you what. I will have to stop doing this radio show if Dick does not get. What is it? What is the conclusion, Dick? That no one's listening.
No one's listening.
It's
well,
an
you know what? You could mention it tomorrow because it's a different audience. Maybe the people today don't want to follow me.
I'm just shocked. So what do? Shocked. We go to Twitter.com. If you don't have an account, make one. It's free. And all you have to do. I'm saying if nobody does this, if we can't get you 10,000 followers by Tuesday, that's 1,300 more people. That's all. If I can't get, that means no one's listening. I'm going to quit. So I'm going to quit. That's it. So everybody go right now to twitter.com and sign up if you're not already a member, and then follow the Gizwiz. Maybe I spelled it wrong last time. Is it THEGIZWIZ?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Probably.
You think basically people don't like me?
No, I think there's some guy named the Cheese Whiz who has 100,000 followers right now. That's what I think. It's the Giz Whiz, folks. And you know, it's worth following Dick because he gives away thousands of dollars in cash and prizes each and every day on the. No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He's funny, though. He's funny. He'll make you laugh.
You know.
Isn't that worth $1,000? Just the laugh.
It is to me. But I ain't paying it.
Look, listen to this one. This was a couple of days ago. Turner Classic Movies doing all Mummy movies tonight. The Mummy, The Curse of the Mummy, The Mummy Shroud, but no Mummy Dearest. Dick does the Daily Giz with DGW. It's at twit.tv/DGW, and we'll talk again next week. Please follow him for his birthday. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.